Greetings, Hoopsheads. Welcome to Locked On Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's Tuesday, May 22nd. I'm your host, Aliko Carter. I'm ready to go. Got my espresso, got my oat milk chai latte. But you know who's not ready to go is Andre Iguodala. Knee contusion, doubtful for tonight. Changes the rotations for the Warriors. Gonna be interesting to see what Steve Kerr comes up with should Andre not be a go. We're going to get into that, what to expect from this fourth game of Houston versus Golden State, as well as LeBron's 44-point outing in Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals. You can catch this podcast on Spotify, iTunes, iOS, Google Play, and LockedOnWarriors.com, as well as LockedOnSports.com. You can find me on Twitter at Kogitare, Kogitare. You can find my written work on Forbes.com, as well as BleacherReport.com, and you can check me out on LinkedIn if you want to see all of my qualifications. That's Aliko Carter, A-L-I-K-O. Definitely check us out on Facebook as well, Locked On Dubs and Locked On NBA Net, and back to Twitter, you can also check out every podcast at Locked On Dubs. I'm seeing now that Andre was updated to questionable for Game 4. That's obviously a good sign, and hopefully we can expect him to be in the lineup. But if not, do the Warriors start someone like Jordan Bell? He played good minutes in Game 3, and I'm sure they want to keep Kevon on the bench to bring him in and kind of keep his rotation similar to what they've been. Maybe Nick Young as well. He's shown that he can stay in front of Houston's offense when he's locked in, that is. And he can still knock down a three-pointer with the best of them. Brings a shooting ability that Andre just doesn't have. And with Curry, KD, and Draymond on the floor, you've got playmakers out the wazoo, the ability to get the ball where it needs to go. And all Nick Young would need to do is run around screens, use that patented step over with the pump fake, and knock shots down. We are hoping that Andre can go. I want to take a look at Andre's numbers. So far in this series, it seems as though he's not doing that much. But if you dive a little bit closer, he's doing a little bit of everything. In Game 3, 10 points, and across the board, effective. 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals and a block in 26 and a half minutes. His defense is undeniably integral to what the Warriors are trying to do, which is get back to the finals. He was a minus 22 in that Game 2 blowout the Houston Rockets delivered to the Warriors. But that wasn't even worst on the team. Not worst among the starters. That would be Kevin Durant at a minus 28. He wasn't as effective defensively in this game. Recorded no steals or blocks and posted an offensive rating of 78. Lowest among the starters. He turned the ball over on 38% of possessions he used. I mean, it's not like he uses a lot of possessions. His usage rate was lowest among the starters in this game, except for Draymond Green, who assisted the ball and only took 5 shots. Andre, not known for taking a lot of shots, only 4 shots in this game. But you turn the ball over 3 times and you take 4 shots. It's not a recipe for making things happen. Andre, known for his playmaking, didn't do a lot in this game, either 1 assist. He only contested 5 shots, also lowest among the starters, though he plays the fewest minutes of any starter. It kind of feels like as goes Andre, so go the Warriors. In Game 1, he went to the free throw line 8 times, most on the team, scoring 11 points, including 7 from the free throw line. He was more effective defensively, recording a personal defensive rating of 84 and an offensive rating of 167. That's a net rating of 83, according to basketballreference.com. As I've talked about in the past, NBA.com stats have a different metric for measuring offensive and defensive rating. I'll probably continue to go back and forth between the two metrics, but will let you know where I get my information from. With those 7 free throws made, he has a true shooting percentage of 84.4 in this game. And though he broke even on the plus-minus, his impact was definitely felt, attacking the defense, playing great defense himself, and recording 2 steals to boot. His ability to guard multiple positions, his basketball IQ on both ends of the floor, they all serve to hold the team together. And I gotta say, there's nothing like an Andre breakaway. Gets the people going. He has the best hands. His arms are longer than he is tall. And he knows how to use them to disrupt offensive players. He didn't win Finals MVP 3 years ago for nothing. Now, really quickly, I want to talk about this shoving match between Trevor Ariza and Draymond Green that resulted in a double technical. Green fouled Ariza on his way to the basket and then kind of put his arm on Ariza's back as Ariza was getting up off the ground. And Trevor took exception to that. Draymond was standing very close to him, putting his arms on him, and Ariza shoved him. There was some talking that ensued, and it resulted in a double technical, which is fair. Draymond was definitely the instigator in this moment, and it's kind of unfortunate that he did gain his third technical of the playoffs, as when you get 7, you're suspended for a game. He's got to keep his composure if we don't want a repeat of what happened in 2016. But I also applaud him for getting under Ariza's skin. The more he's in Trevor's head, the worse Trevor will play, or at least that's the theory. So Draymond doing a little bit of everything in helping the Warriors win. By this point in the fourth quarter, the Warriors were already up by 31. But let's hope that this sentiment carries over into game 4 and that Draymond is truly in Ariza's head. The more the Warriors take the Houston role players out of their game, the easier it will be to win. Draymond is an instigator, and I love it. Gonna move on to the next segment. We'll talk Curry, including my views on his outburst on Monday night, for which he was scolded by his mother. Stay tuned. So apparently, Sonya Curry was not happy with Steph's outburst. Of course, I'm talking about him yelling, "This is my fucking house," after a layup in the third quarter. Curry told reporters, "She already sent me 2 home videos showing me the clip and playing it back. She was telling me how I need to wash my mouth out, saying to wash it out with soap. It's a message I've heard before. She's right. I gotta do better. I can't talk like that." Curry, obviously a very strong Christian with 2 daughters and a baby on the way, being a role model for children everywhere. But this is 2018 and children hear language like that all the time. I love the outburst. I loved it. The Warriors need fire from Curry. They need him to shimmy. They need him to yell. They need him to wave his hands. They need him to knock down ridiculous 3-pointers. It helps. And when he interacts with the crowd like that, it only serves to make them more raucous. I can understand where Sonya is coming from, but at the same time, I don't think Steph has ever been that demonstrative at home. And it really is. Oracle is the house that Stephen Curry built. So it's not like he was lying. He just got a little overzealous, but 18 points in the third quarter will make anybody a little overzealous. Curry went on to say to Mark J. Spears at the Undefeated, "If they ever thought I was perfect, then they got the wrong message to begin with. I try to do the right things all the time. I have an awareness of who I represent on the court. In that moment, I fell a little short. I have to try to do better next time." When asked about his struggles, including going 1 of 5 from 3 in game 1 and 1 of 8 from 3 in game 2, as well as 1 of 7 from 3 in the first half of game 3, Curry told Spears, "This is what makes a great player and person in general. Just being able to deal with failure, frustration, whatever it is, not living up to your own expectations. Not letting yourself get defeated. There are plenty of opportunities to do that when there are 800 cameras in your face and questions about why are you not shooting this? Why did you play so bad in game 2? Whatever it is. You got to block that out and really be your own worst critic and your own biggest fan. Like I said, it's hard to do at times because everybody's human. But consistently, that's gotten me through some tough times and really keeps my perspective right when games go well too, because it can change quick." And Curry's right. His play around the rim has been stellar. He's up to 78% around the rim in the playoffs from the low 60s in the regular season. His percentage around the rim is 12 percentage points higher than Clint Capella's. This according to Will Gottlieb at Bleacher Report. But any player who shoots the ball from as far away as Curry shoots the ball is going to miss some shots. going to miss a lot of shots, not make half of them. Of course, 40% being the demarcator of when a three-point shooter goes from being good to being great. Curry has historically been above that mark, but anybody can go through a slump, including the preternatural Curry. Klay Thompson in a bit of a slump himself. I'm sure the Warriors will be prepared with actions to spring both Thompson and Curry open for good shots, as well as relying on Curry's wizardry with the ball in his hands. And of course, there's Kevin Durant, who I did a segment on yesterday. The man is a robot. If Curry is human, Kevin Durant might just be a robot. The shot from three is not really falling for Durant, but he's scoring so much, scoring so efficiently that it doesn't really matter. Tom Haberstroh at Bleacher Report has a really good piece about how Curry plays with and without Durant on the floor. With Durant on the floor in this regular season, Curry scored 26.2 points per 36 minutes. Very solid. But with Durant on the bench, Curry scored 40.5 points per 36 minutes. He scored 455 points in 404 minutes. Without Durant on the floor, Curry scored 54 points per 48 minutes. He reverted to his unanimous MVP days. Durant sees a modest bump when Curry's off the floor, going from 26.1 points per 36 to 29.6 points per 36. Curry's jump also outstrips other All-Stars, who get better when their All-Star partners go to the bench. Chris Paul, when Harden goes to the bench, is 10.9 points better. For comparison, Curry without Durant is 14.3 points better per 36. And Curry without Thompson, 8.9 points better. Of the top 12 increases, Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant both show up. Klay Thompson without Durant is a plus 6.4. And Kevin Durant without Klay Thompson is a plus 6. The Warriors just showing up everywhere on this list. So they give up possessions when they're playing together, but they play better. And then they take over when somebody's on the bench. This is exemplified by Curry most clearly. But it's also clear that Thompson and Durant get more touches when the other is off the floor. And Steve Kerr staggers his minutes accordingly. It's really a luxury to have an offensively explosive player on the court at all times. I think you're going to see Stephen Curry's usage go up in game 4, and Kevin Durant hunting for fewer baskets, getting more baskets within the flow of the offense. And of course, the flow of the offense is partly designed to get Kevin Durant the mismatch he's looking for, but it's also designed for multiple actions. Many plays the Warriors run have weak side action that springs players open for three-pointers while also getting players cutting to the basket, multiple screens, and getting the entire defense off balance rather than hunting for a specific mismatch. I think you're going to see more of that in game 4, especially as it relates to Klay Thompson, who needs these actions as more than 90% of his shots are unassisted, though he has been taking it to the rim with aplomb lately, making a high percentage of his shots at the cup, but it hasn't made up for his inaccuracy out there at 15 to 16 feet and also from beyond the three-point line. What I'm hoping for, not predicting, but hoping for, is a big game from all four players. I think everyone is primed to have a breakout. I wouldn't be surprised if all three of the sharpshooting snipers the Warriors have break the 20-point plateau, with one or two of them breaking the 30-point plateau and Draymond once again dominating the boards, assisting the ball, and getting his. I think that the Warriors are primed, and I think that they have the Rockets on their toes. I don't think there's anything the Rockets can do to stop Kevin Durant, and when the team is moving the ball, the Rockets just can't keep up. Offensively, they're playing right into the Warriors' hands by hunting for Stephen Curry, because they're not getting their guys involved. The ball moved a lot more in game 2, their only win, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go back to moving the ball a little bit more, but I don't think it's going to be enough. I got the Warriors tonight. Stay tuned for a check-in on LeBron versus the Celtics. So Celtics versus Cavaliers is tied at 2 games apiece, with LeBron scoring 44 points on 28 shots, making only 9 of 13. From the charity stripe, but did have 5 rebounds, 3 assists. Bad turnover night for LeBron, 7, but 2 steals. And Cleveland basically had a wire-to-wire victory, but partly because other people played well. Tristan Thompson, George Hill, Kyle Korver once again in 25 minutes, 14 points, 3 blocked shots. He's actually a pretty big guy, listed at 6'7", 212, and definitely did a good job of, one, staying in front of his assignments, and two, tracking the ball. Not a great game from Kevin Love, 9.6 turnovers, but the Cavaliers relied on Tristan Thompson for 38 and a half minutes of action, second on the team only to LeBron, who played 42. And that's because Thompson came through big time. He played well in Game 3 and then was just magnificent in Game 4, 13 points, 12 rebounds. He fought, he attacked, and he feasted. The Celtics, for their part, I don't know how they can keep up these crazy minutes for Tatum, Horford, Brown, and Rozier, who all played more than 38 minutes, with Horford clocking in at 42. They got almost no help from their bench. Marcus Smart the most with 8 points, tied with Aaron Baines. And the only other bench player to play was Semi Ojeleye. No Greg Monroe this time around. It's just tough to ask guys. I mean, these are young guys. They have the energy. But it's tough to ask these guys. Jason Tatum, a rookie, 38 minutes. Jaylen Brown, 40 minutes, second year. It's tough to ask those guys to face LeBron James, who face a seasoned veteran team, and have their stuff together for 40 minutes. Jaylen Brown, for his part, 25 points, but 23 shots. He has got to be tired, playing a lot of minutes against LeBron as well. And I still want to see Al Horford take more shots, only 5 of 13. I said this in the last podcast. 15 points on 13 shots. The Cavaliers deserve credit for what they did to try to limit his touches, limit his ability to make things happen around the rim. But he just didn't seem that aggressive. Thompson able to bully him. But even so, he was a +2 on the night. Just goes to show, plus minus doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. Defensively, he did contest 16 shots, which is 7 more than anyone else on the team. His defense was once again staunch, but the Cavs were just too much. Horford also had 5 screen assists. He does all the little things. I'd imagine Brad Stevens says some similar things about Horford as Kerr says about a guy like Andre Iguodala. We don't need his scoring. He does everything else on the floor for us. But I think the Celtics do need Al Horford's scoring. I think they need him to do everything he's doing on the defensive end while putting up more shots and making more shots. I mean, if he goes 9 of 13 instead of 5 of 13, the Celtics are in the game. And he's getting most of his shots right around the rim, only took 3 three-pointers, making 1. But Boston only had 38 points in the paint to Cleveland's 50, and that's got to change. It starts with Horford searching for his offense and continues with the dribble penetration that Tatum and Brown and Rozier provide. Despite the victory, Cleveland only won 1 quarter. They jumped out pretty quickly, 34-18 in the first, but allowed 35 points in the second quarter, but still were able to take a big lead into halftime, and Boston couldn't eat into it enough. They simply ran out of time. They had momentum in the second half, but also LeBron scored 22 points in the second half and was the one thing that carried over from halftime for the Cavaliers, allowing the Cavaliers to keep that lead and ultimately win by 9. As is often the case, the game was a little bit more of a blowout than the final score indicated. Lots of blowouts in these conference finals, as coaches revamp their schemes and players go off. And these momentum swings are natural. I mean, you're going to have teams play better at home. The Celtics, Cavaliers, Rockets, and Warriors are all examples of this. And on the flip side, teams playing worse on the road. Definitely the Celtics, a team that plays much worse on the road, could only manage 37 rebounds to 47 for the Cavs. And I honestly can't explain. Well, one, Jason Tatum was before this game playing better on the road than he was at home, thanks to ESPN. But I can't explain why certain teams play better at home. Like, does the home court advantage, does the crowd really affect players? They would say probably not. I think most players would say they play the same way on the road versus at home. But the numbers don't bear that out, especially for the Celtics, who are going home and are lucky they have the home court advantage in this best of three series with the Cavs. But you can't count LeBron out. And as I said, I'm inclined to agree with Miles that the winners of Game 4 would go on to win the series in both conferences. And I'm standing by that. Got to wrap it up here. Enjoy the game tonight, and I'll catch you tomorrow. Stay thoughtful, Hoopsheads.